They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." And Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Welcome back, faithful listeners, to yet another episode of Magellan's at the Movies. I'm your host, Nathan Mogollyines, joined as always, and as I always will, by my co-host, Elliot Mogollyines. Elliot, we had some tough news this week. We lost a living legend in James Earl Jones, who passed away tragically, I think on Monday of this week. Elliot, you know, what are your thoughts here? What are your reactions to this loss?
Yeah, I think that you were right on the money there. James Earl Jones was an honest to goodness Hollywood legend. Yeah. Obviously he had so many massive roles in Lion King, Star Wars. I'll always remember his brief appearance in Doctor Strangelove. I think that was actually like his first ever film appearance.
Wow.
But yeah, I mean, what is there to say about James Earl Jones that people don't already feel? He was a fantastic actor. He seemed like a really great person. When I was reading his obituary, he apparently had a very difficult, like, personal story. Like, he had a severe stutter as a child that he had to that left him mute for a few years, that he had to overcome in order to become an actor. I think he was raised by a very racist grandmother. That couldn't have been fun. So, yeah, and then to then be known for your voice and the steadiness of your voice, that's a really inspiring story. So, yeah, a heartfelt rest in peace to him. Thoughts and prayers to the family. Everyone loves thoughts and prayers. And I really, really hope that Disney does not take him up on his offer to use AI to recreate his voice for the rest of all time, because that will be bad.
Yeah, I do think that's crazy that he was mute, because, yeah, probably his two most famous iconic roles are only voice in Darth Vader and Mufasa. So, yeah. The only other piece of kind of movie news, I guess, is next week, I believe, is the release date for Francis Ford Coppola's Megalopolis. This movie has had a tough go of it getting to here. I received kind of fairly polarizing reactions when it first premiered at festivals. And then they had to pull a trailer because it featured fake quotes made with AI, which is an insane thing for someone to think they could get away with. Because I've seen the people they were pulling quotes from. These are like iconic reviewers whose reviews are very, very well maintained and very searchable. So to think you could get away with making up something Pauline Kael said is crazy. But apparently the person who was charged with making that trailer thought they could. So, but I'm excited for the movie. I'm very much hoping to go see it in theaters and be able to support, you know, struggling artist FFC.
Dude, I gotta say, Francis Ford has really gone down in my estimation.
What?
With all the, with just making a total clown of himself in this movie's, in the run-up to this movie's release. Like, he's been Ridley Scott levels of belligerent, of being like, oh, no one understands me, I'm a genius, this movie's amazing, and everyone else is just stupid. Like, dude, can we get a little perspective here? Can we have a little humility? But no, he's the poor, poor, put-upon artist whose work is unfairly maligned by the evil, nasty critic.
Which is kind of funny, considering he has three, like, legendary canonical films. And I also find his bluster in the press runs a little funny, given that it's not like he hasn't... I'm pretty sure he made a movie in the last decade, and it was critically panned for being terrible. So it's not like he's making some generations in the making comeback. He's released movies this century, so yeah. Although now that you mention Ridley Scott, I am excited to see Ridley Scott's press run for Gladiator 2 once that starts picking up. I love Ridley Scott. The press run for Napoleon was honestly more entertaining than the movie Napoleon. It was super funny. I love how many times he just insulted the French for no reason. It was great. Great.
Well, that's fantastic, Nathan. I don't find being a jerk to be particularly endearing myself.
It just had such big, you know, out of touch old man energy, which I always find very funny in contrast to the energy that, you know, the interviewers typically bring. He was a little belligerent and rude, but sometimes that's funny, Elliot.
I mean, it can be funny in movies. In real life, it's just being rude.
It's just like the Joker, you know, sometimes all you can do in society is laugh.
Good point.
Anyway, let's leap in to discussing the movie that we're doing today. Elliot, you chose this. You are far more familiar with this source material and this film, I would say, than I am. So how about you give our audience a little bit of an intro? What are we talking about today? What's the deal? Why should we care?
All right, well, why you should care, that's something you'll have to discover for yourself. I can't give that answer to you. But what we're talking about here is It, a 2017 movie directed by Andy Muschietti. I thought it was Muschietti, but I heard it recently pronounced Muschietti, so I'll just go with that.
Nice, good job.
Actually, fun fact, my voice is kind of leaving me. That's the first fun fact. Second fun fact is that he is kind of a one half of a brother-sister pair. The sister being Barbara Muschietti, who's a producer on this movie and who he works with very often. So that's nice.
Fun.
But anyway, this movie is it's based on the Stephen King novel of the same name, which I have read. I read it after I watched this movie, but before I watched It Chapter 2. The book is okay. There are parts of it that are very good, and then there are parts of it that are very early Stephen King, and that is not a compliment. But anyway, the movie is about an evil, shape-shifting, possibly magical, possibly alien thing that most often shows up as a clown named Pennywise. Pennywise the Dancing Clown. who is evil. He's bad. It's a bad thing. It's a bad it. And it preys mostly on children. Well, I can't really tell if it preys mostly on children or it doesn't really care because there are... Well, it doesn't matter. Right now, what it's doing is preying on children. Quite literally, eating children. So, obviously, we can't have that. And he is... is threatening our main cast of young characters who don't want to be eaten, and so they want to fight back a little bit. Maybe kick it out of the town, take care of it forever. And along the way, learn a few life lessons, make a few friendships.
So true.
So, I'll just keep on talking, because everyone loves it when I do that.
Great. Yeah.
My experience with this movie is I first watched this when I was, I think, very early in high school, or I may have been in middle school. Not 100% sure. It's hard to remember things. I couldn't have been in middle school.
Yeah, unless you have a time machine, this movie came out when you were in high school, dude.
Yeah. All right. Never mind. So ignore it. We'll cut that. This movie came out... I first watched this movie when I was in high school. And I did not see it in theaters because I was too scared. But I watched it with Nathan sometime later and really enjoyed it. I thought that it was more cool than scary. I liked all the cool forms that Pennywise took. And it was just like a simple, fun time. I liked it a lot. And then I watched it a few more times after that. But now this, I decided that we would review this. And this is the first time that I've seen it since, well, I don't know, for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
That's my initial experience with it. I'll hold off on first impressions because I have been talking for a while. So Nathan, what's your experience with this movie? And then you can give us your first impression.
Well, as always, I do have to throw in some of the movie context. Elliot always be talking about books and directors. No one cares about that. This movie made a ton of gosh dang money. I believe it's in the top 5 highest grossing R-rated movies of all time, I want to say. It was, for a period, it might have been number 2 or something. It was very high up there. It made a huge amount of money. It was hugely successful. My experience with the movie is I did see it in theaters. For some reason, our father wanted to see it, and so he took me with. And I think it was my first horror movie I saw in the theaters. I had a really tough time of it. This movie has a lot of people investigating strange noises when I really wish they would go hide in a closet or something. Both for my sanity and for their self-preservation. And they don't ever do that. But much like you, Elliot, I did really enjoy this movie when I first saw it. I think it is more of, I would almost call it like action horror as opposed to just a straight horror film. Because while I do think the movie is trying to unsettle you and be scary, there's, in most of the sequences, there's a moment where it kind of gives up trying to be scary and is just characters running away from something scary, which might still be unsettling to you. But it clearly changes the tone from something like The Conjuring, where the thing that they're fighting is never really seen or felt outside of, you know, it knocking books off of a shelf. In it is something that they can fight. There is a climactic battle with the thing. There's, you know, characters run away from it. They're able to injure it. I would compare it somewhat to The Thing in that, again, that movie's trying to be very unsettling, but there's moments where it's just an all-out brawl. It's just a fight between the humans and the thing they're fighting. Anyway, moving on to, I'm not going to hold back on my current thoughts. I enjoyed this a fair amount less than I remember enjoying it. I, much like you, it's been a couple years since I've seen it. And I think in that time, I've just watched a lot of horror movies that were scarier and coming-of-age movies that were better at depicting children coming of age. And I think this movie kind of struggles to have both of those elements be very strong. I think there's parts where it is a really fantastic. It has one scare that I think is one of the best, most unsettling images I've seen in a movie. It still kind of unsettles me, even knowing that it's coming. And it's got some fantastic scenes of camaraderie and kind of classic youthful innocence and youthful escapades. But those I found this time somewhat few and far between. And in general, it felt like the movie was not as scary as I remembered, and not as much fun watching the kids' activities as I remember. So I'm going to be a little harsh on this movie, but let's see if Elliot, are you in the same place as me, or are we going to have to tussle, verbally speaking?
And we're too far away to get into a physical altercation. But that happened all the time with Siskel and Ebert. They were always just getting into fisticuffs.
Yeah, that's why they had to keep adding chairs in between them on the set. Because mm-hmm. they'd just kick each other.
Yeah, but we're more professional than that. We're more composed. That's why we're better. Anyway, that doesn't matter. No one cares. I was very surprised at how many problems I had with this movie this time around. So, Nathan, I'm in the same boat as you. I would characterize the reduction in my enjoyment from the most recent time I watched this movie to, well, the second most recent time I watched this movie to this most recent time I watched this movie, I would characterize that reduction as pretty significant. Mm. I would say that my problems kind of fall into three broad categories, and that is characters, structure, and antagonist. But in general, I would say that I agree this movie's not particularly scary. I think that was a very good way to describe it, of like action horror, that this is kind of something that you can fight back against. Kind of like Halloween, that people are always, or even more appropriately, Scream, because Ghostface is always getting the snot kicked out of him. Which I love.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the main problem is the structure of this movie, because I think that there are times where I would even call it disjointed, and it feels like there are just random scenes of the children getting scared that have nothing to do with what came before them and nothing to do with what comes after them, that they're just like, oh yeah, by the way, Pennywise is out there scaring people. So yeah, well, let's start actually with something that I'm assuming we can both agree on, and that is Pennywise the clown, not his other forms or not him as an antagonist. I'm talking about Pennywise the clown because I think he's fantastic, and he's absolutely made by Bill Skarsgård, who delivers just an incredible performance. Pennywise is so, I mean, his design is really good. If you've never seen him, just like Google a picture right now and you'll see what I mean. He's got a great design. He looks really good. Bill Skarsgård's voice is perfect for the role. And as everyone knows by now, he has a lazy eye that he can kind of like, I don't know, let go of his control of, so that Pennywise is looking in two places at once, which looks very scary. It's very effective. But yeah, his a lot of it come because he's so heavily made up. A lot of his performance comes through in the voice, which is really good. Like he, it's hard to describe, and I probably don't have the right terminology to describe it, but the way that he modulates his voice from high-pitched to low-pitched, and sometimes he talks really fast and sometimes really slow, and just like his gestures, there's a scene where he's advancing on a helpless child in the well house, and he's like making fun of him, he's like mock crying, and he's moving his arms all around. It's just really good. It's very physical. And yeah, it's fantastic. It was easily my favorite part of the movie was Pennywise and Bill Skarsgård's performance as him in this film. But what do you have to say about that, Nathan?
I agree. I feel much the same way. I think Bill Skarsgård does a great job. I think the opening of this movie with Georgie talking to Pennywise as Pennywise is in the biggest gosh dang sewer drain I've ever seen. I've never seen a sewer drain that I thought I could crawl into, even as a child. Derry has the least safe sewer drains I've ever seen. But it's very creepy. Yeah, for all of the reasons you mentioned. His voice is weird and his design is, it looks enough like a clown that you're like, yeah, that's kind of a clown, but also enough like a psychopath or someone you would see, you know, roaming in a forest trying to kill people, that it's disturbing. And I love all of the little gross touches. Apparently the like teeth inserts that Bill Skarsgård had to wear for it made him drool. And they just left it in because it just looks creepy that Pennywise is constantly drooling. Also, I think it makes sense. If he enjoys eating children, he would drool in the presence of eating children in the same way I drool in the presence of a pepperoni pizza.
That's true. Every time Nathan is in front of a pepperoni pizza, it's like a rainstorm underneath his chin.
I also really like how every time Pennywise like shakes his head, there's like a bell jingle sort of sound effect. It's just such a goofy. Yeah, it's very goofy. I love Pennywise. I think he's a great villain. I think he's incredibly well portrayed by Bill Skarsgård in this movie. And I have nothing bad to say about him. You'll never get me to say something bad about him.
I'll give you a pepperoni pizza if you say something bad about it.
I hate Bill Skarsgård.
Works every time. Okay, so yeah, there's Pennywise. And now you're probably wondering, I can hear you wondering now, but wait a minute, Elliot. You said that you had a problem with the antagonist, and yet you just spent like 5 minutes praising Bill Skarsgård. What are you talking about? Well, calm down. Just calm down for a second and I'll explain. My problem is not with Pennywise, like I said. Pennywise the clown. I think that the antagonist, it, whatever it is, the alien, the evil spirit, it is an alien, in the book at least.
Spoiler!
I can't remember if it's an alien in the second movie.
I don't know.
The second movie is not very good. What was I saying? Oh, yeah. It's that I think that it's actually because I like Pennywise so much that I think that there are some that they don't quite make as good use of him as they could have, because mostly, well, maybe not mostly, but like about an equal amount of times does he appear as just some random thing that the children are afraid of, like Georgie's corpse or a painting of a woman flautist or a diseased guy. And it's tricky because Pennywise's or its whole thing is that it's a shapeshifter, that it can change shape and also possibly make people hallucinate. I'm a little unclear because, like, sometimes it seems like it's in two places at once. Either it's in two places at once or people are hallucinating or seeing things that aren't real. Because Bill keeps on saying when they're in the well house, it's not real. When there's like black sludge coming to them. But Pennywise himself is downstairs threatening Eddie. So I'm not sure what's going on there.
Yeah.
And that's a slight problem, is like, what is exactly its powers? Can it just shapeshift? Does it have magical powers to make people hallucinate? Here's your question. But anyway, those things, the flautist, the leper, Georgie's corpse, are not very compelling as antagonists because they're kind of just one and done things. Just show up and then they scare the children and then they're gone. And if you're lucky, Pennywise will show up at the end to kind of cap it off and you're like, ooh, now we're at good stuff. Like when the diseased guy shows up and then at the end, Pennywise shows up and makes the same joke from The Simpsons, where he's like, if you lived here, you'd be home by now. Which is a joke in the episode where Marge becomes a real estate agent and Lionel Hutz tries to sell her a house. And he's like, if you lived here, you'd be home by now. I can't do a Phil Hartman voice.
That was close.
But anyway, I think that they kind of interfere with its ability to become a grounded, cohesive antagonist. That because it is so many different things, when what you really want to see and what is most effective is Pennywise, these moments where it's just a diseased guy or Georgie don't really work quite as well. And they do contribute to this movie not being particularly scary, which it tears me up because y'all know me. Y'all know I don't like being scared. And yet, there is a part of me, a deeply repressed, hidden part of me that is like, come on. Let's have more. Let's have something scarier. Let's have something worse. Something that'll actually make me be afraid to watch this movie at night. Because I watch this movie at night by myself, like a big boy.
Wow.
But I wanted to be unable to do that. And secretly, I wanted to be like, oh no, I have to watch this movie in the daytime. Because I'm just a glutton for punishment. But yeah, that's what I think about Pennywise the Clown and it as a thing, an alien.
I don't really agree. I don't have, I guess it's not so much that I don't agree. I don't really have an issue with the fact that Pennywise, that it shapeshifts into forms that are not as scary as Pennywise or not as interesting as Pennywise. I agree that the diseased man is less scary because it's just kind of a gross looking thing. It's not really something that's disturbing. I think my issue with these is kind of related to the second issue that you talked about, which is the structure of the movie. And my issue with that is, in relation to the antagonist, is that for a lot of this movie, Pennywise is just kind of messing with the kids. Like, he's not genuinely threatening them. He's just like showing up to scare them a little bit and then he leaves, which in a horror movie, obviously you want more than one scene where you're trying to scare the audience. The thing is a lot of these scenes aren't very scary. Like Eddie, I think it's Eddie, who finds the diseased man and then like runs away around the Hill House. It's not a particularly scary scene because the gross guy just kind of shows up and then he runs away and then there's Pennywise and then that's it. Like, there's nothing. Other sequences, like I already said, characters are way too willing to investigate strange things in this movie. Beverly hearing voices from the sink drain and then sticking a whole tape measure down it is ludicrous. Why would you do that? Especially given the things she's already seen up to this point in the movie, I feel like she should be a little more hesitant to go poking around with bizarre things. And so just in general, it feels like the antagonist is very aimless. It doesn't represent very much of a threat because he seems to be fairly content to just kind of tease the children from a distance as opposed to genuinely present a physical danger to them. The only scene that is still so creepy to me is when Ben's in the library and the librarian is like clearly possessed by Pennywise or something. And she starts just staring at him in the background. And it's an incredible scare. Genuinely one of the best. I remember seeing this in the theater and I was just beyond stressed for the rest of the movie because every shot I was trying to look in the background to see, oh, where's Pennywise? Like, where's this freak creeping me out in the background? And it never shows up again. They never use that trick again, which I think is tragic because it's one of the best, most disturbing images in the movie, in my opinion. That it's not super obvious. I think it's obvious enough that, and they hold the shot for long enough that if you're looking around, you'll notice it. But it's not like she's in focus. It's not like it's a huge focus of the shot. It's just really creepy, and I think it's one of the best moments in the movie because it makes the entire town feel unsafe way more effectively than these other sequences where, like, they just get jumped by some gross diseased man, or Mike starts seeing hands poke out of a door. Like, those aren't really scary to me because that's too overt. But this subtle sort of stuff, that really messes with me. But yeah, in general, the sequences where the kids are just kind of like get briefly attacked by Pennywise or by it to scare them, it doesn't work. It's not very scary to me. And it just kind of kills the pacing of the movie. Because like you said, there a lot of these scenes serve no narrative function outside of just letting us know that it's still alive, I guess. I don't know. So I dislike the antagonist because it feels like the antagonist spends a huge amount of the movie not doing anything productive, which is even more apparent in the second one, where he spends the entire movie doing nothing of substance.
Okay. Yeah, we're not here to litigate the second movie, although the second movie is not very good, in case anyone wants to know. I shouldn't have said that, because then it just made me forget what I was going to actually say, what I actually wanted to say, that was of substance. Yeah, I think that it's coming back to me. The scene where Eddie is attacked by the diseased man, which is quickly becoming like our most hated scene in the movie. I think that's perfectly emblematic of my problem with this movie structure, because it is useless. It has nothing to do with, I mean, I already said this, it has nothing to do with what happened before it, and it doesn't have anything to do with what's going to happen after it. That it's just there, I guess, in a very narrative functional sense, it serves to introduce Eddie to Pennywise, or to it, so that he knows that it's a thing. But I do have to wonder if there's a way of more seamlessly integrating that rather than just having this completely detached scene of Eddie getting scared by the diseased dude and then Pennywise. And that happens quite a bit because there's another scene, the scene with Stanley when he's introduced to the woman flautist. That's another scene that is very disjointed. The scene where Bill goes into the basement and sees dead Georgie, and then also sees Pennywise. That's another example of it's just completely, it messes with the movie, and it makes its structure feel so disjointed that you have these scenes that are kind of awkwardly stitched together rather than scenes that like flow from the preceding scene into the next one, which is what you always want. And I do think, now that we've opened the floodgates of talking about the second movie, I do think that that problem is much more overstated, is much more present in the second movie, which is a part of why it's so much worse, because it is worse than this movie quite a bit. So yeah, that's tough. And I do acknowledge that this is kind of a hard situation, because this movie is it's an ensemble cast. You got a lot of characters here, and you do have to, every one of them has to know that it is a thing, except for Richie for some reason. I mean, he does figure it out eventually, but they all have to be, they all do have to have their own moments with Pennywise or with it, so that when Bill is like, oh, something weird is happening, they're not like, oh, well, that's just crazy, Bill, you're going insane. And that does kind of lead me into my next point. See there, that it flows from what came before to what comes afterwards. Which is about characters. And this is kind of related to what you were talking about, Nathan, with the whole, this being a fairly subpar coming of age story. That, and again, I acknowledge that it is tough to do that. It is tough to make a movie with an ensemble cast. It's easier with a book because you've got more time with a book. Yeah. People don't object as strenuously to padding. But in a movie, you are a little bit more pressed. So I acknowledge that that's a difficulty. And yet, I also acknowledge that these characters are very one-dimensional, that they each kind of have, they're each assigned a single trait of vulgar for Richie, nervous for Stanley, sickly for Eddie, has a crush on Beverly for Ben.
And Bill.
And Bill. But Bill's lucky because he gets two. He's got a crush on Beverly and he's got a missing brother. So good job, Ben. You get two.
That's crazy. That's
two whole dimensions. Woo-hoo. Whoa. Good for him. But, and again, like this time around, I really noticed it, that each of these, that they're not really characters so much as they are a collection of character traits embodied by actors. And that's unfortunate, because I think the kid actors all do a great job. Like, thumbs up to each and every one of them for playing these characters so well. Because obviously kid actors are very hit and miss, but no, they all do a great job. No notes there. And that is another part that I really enjoyed about the movie, is that the acting is all so good. Even all the slimy, greasy, creepy adults. Cool. Good job, guys. Hope you don't show that on your resume or anything, because that might creep a person out. But no, and that does inhibit my ability to A, enjoy this group as a group, as a group of friends. Like last week we were talking about the Ninja Turtles and the moments of tenderness that they had that made them feel like a family, feel like a group of friends, which I didn't get as much in this movie. There are a few moments where they kind of like, I don't know, close ranks, so to speak, around each other, and they actually feel like friends because they're trying to help each other out. They feel like they care about each other. Like, they feel like friends for most of the time, but there are very rare moments where they feel like they care about each other. And that's really what I want from my movie friendships, from my all my movie relationships, except for the antagonistic ones, which that's the opposite. I don't want Batman and Joker to feel like they care about each other. Anyway, what am I even talking about? Yes, so it makes me struggle to connect with them as a group. And it makes it obviously very difficult for any of them to have very well-defined character arcs. Like Bill is kind of the main man, and he's got the most dimensions too, like we said. But I don't know, does he really go on an arc? Like, he accepts that Georgie is dead, but is that, that's not a very emotionally satisfying arc, because we as the audience already know that. Like, we already know, okay, Georgie's dead, either that or he's got one arm. Well, no, he's dead. Like, there's no way for him to have survived that. So we already know that, and then in order to make us, like, empathize with or connect very deeply to a character who's gone through this traumatic loss and has to come to terms with that, I think more time needed to be spent with him, in order to more firmly establish that and to establish a journey from Georgie's got to be alive to Georgie's dead, because he doesn't really have an emotional journey so much as he has a very little journey of Pennywise attacked Georgie, therefore there's no stinking way that he's still alive, rather than like discovering something inside himself. But that is there's a problem with that, or it would be difficult to do that with this movie's very disjointed structure that's kind of scattershot in its approach to its characters, of just like randomly, okay, now let's do Eddie, now let's do Stanley, now let's do Bill, now let's do Ben. So yeah, that's it. All these, the movie's problems are very interconnected, I feel, or at least in this area there.
Yeah, I would agree with your praise of the actors. I think they all do a really good job. I also really like just their banter. I find it very funny, or at least funny in the sense of I laugh at it, not funny in the sense of I'm like, wow, that's how I talk to my friends. I like all their zingers, their little juvenile pranks that they play. I like that stuff. And I guess I don't care as much about that they're not very two-dimensional. Most people, or at least most characters in movies, I feel like aren't very multidimensional. And especially, I think, in coming-of-age movies kind of work on stereotypes and kind of people fitting into boxes. And then typically what makes a good coming-of-age movie is that they try to change your perception of those boxes as the movie goes on, as the characters kind of change their perception of themselves. Which doesn't really happen in this movie. And I think this is very much tied to, like you said, the scattershot structure of the movie. That the scenes where the kids seem to be gelling the best as the group are then interspersed with these meaningless sort of jump scare vignettes that do nothing to progress the plot, and even less to progress the characters' relationship with each other. And this is going to sound really petty and, you know, opinionated of me, but I'm allowed to share my opinion. Some of these scenes where they're, like, gelling as a group are just goofy. I mean, they have goofy music, and maybe I needed to be alive in the 80s, but, like, them cleaning Beverly's bathroom is soundtracked to a stupid sounding song that I don't care about. And it just feels tonally very bizarre that the kids are cleaning up a blood-soaked bathroom soundtracked to what seems to be a fairly upbeat sort of pop song. Similarly, the rock fight that the kids get in against the bullies, which, can I just shout out to Stephen King bullies, the bulliest bullies to ever bully. I was homeschooled, but I did go to a public school, and I never saw anyone do anything like Stephen King bullies do. obviously they're being corrupted by Pennywise or by it. So they're going to be a little more extreme, but I love watching Stephen King movies because you know someone's going to do some crazy nonsense as a bully. But anyway, the rock fight, again, is the way it's shot is goofy. It uses a lot of slow-mo. And again, there's a goofy song. There's just a silly song. And parts of the movie seem to be undercutting its own seriousness with just goofy technical decisions. There's also a lot of Dutch angles in this movie, and I don't like Dutch angles. I think the only compelling reason you should ever use a Dutch angle is to make fun of people who use Dutch angles and to be silly and goofy, because it's a goofy shot. It's stupid. I don't like Dutch angles at all. But yeah, like, the coming of age stuff is undercut by the horror stuff, and the horror stuff is undercut by the coming of age stuff, because both of them feel so tonally different. There is one good coming of age sequence. I like when they go to the quarry. It is somewhat hampered by the fact that every time I see this, it looks like the exact same quarry that the Stranger Things kids go to, which throws me for a loop, because I'm already thrown for a loop by the fact that this movie feels virtually the same as Stranger Things, including having one of the Stranger Things actors in it. And obviously both these movies are pulling from the same sort of influences as each other, so it's maybe more of that. But I do like the scene at the quarry. I think it's a really good... it's just, I love montages. I easily believe things that are shown after montages. If you show me a montage of kids, you know, being kids, at the end of the montage, I'm going to believe that all of them are friends. Like, I'm going to believe that they're all kind of chummy with each other. So I do like the quarry scene. I think there are some okay moments. But I think in general, the coming of age stuff only serves to lessen the tension for the next horror sequence and vice versa.
Sure. I'm not that moved by montages.
I love montages.
Okay. But I do definitely agree that there are some weird stylistic incongruities in this movie. Like in the rock fight, there's just this random shot of the bully in slow motion saying, "F you," or saying the R-rated version of that. And then it gets hit by a rock. And I was like, "What? Where the heck did that come from?"
Yeah. It's just goofy.
Yeah. It's something. The other moment of that I think about is when they go to Ben's house to look at his...
Oh, yeah.
Maps or whatever. And it shows... There's a shot of a poster that he has on the wall. And then there's this weird musical sting. And there's a bunch of close-ups on the poster. And again, I was like, where is this coming from? Because this is so stylistically at odds with the rest of the movie. So, that's weird.
Yeah.
Let's talk about technical elements. I think this movie looks very nice. Cinematography is very good. There are especially some very good shots of Pennywise. I really like the shot when... The shot is very close to the rock fight when Mike is on the ground and he looks over. And then there's a kind of blurred shot of Pennywise. And then it comes back to Mike and he kind of narrows his eyes, and then the shot returns to Pennywise and it clarifies so you can see that he's eating an arm. I think that's really effective, because the first time I watched that, I was like, oh no, the poor child. And then, yeah, that's a good shot. And in general, like, I like the lighting. It doesn't have that stupid, gritty, grimy aesthetic that so many horror movies have. I'm so glad that that's not a thing in horror movies anymore. Whoa. I think I've mentioned that before. But yeah, it's clean, it's slick. Even at the moments when it is a little gross, like when they're in the sewer and there are those doll heads that are also human heads. That's another thing. This movie has really good special effects. I really... It's a shout out. In fact, let's give people their due credit.
Oh boy.
I was going to say, like, oh, let's give credit to the makeup people. There's a lot of makeup people.
Well, yeah.
So great job to Damon, Tony, Sarah, Jeff, Linda, Alec, Rose, Stephanie, Stephen, Deborah, Neil, Jordan, Emily, Christina, Ryan, Jasmine, Sean, Sandra, Michael, Dustin, Tom, Shane, Krista, Daniel, Alana, Adrian, and Alexis. Great job, guys. Top-notch special effects. And yeah, great makeup. On Pennywise, on the diseased guy. Like, I'm pretty sure that's not CGI. That's all in the makeup, my friend. So great job, guys. I really like that. Music, a lot of the music was pretty good at times. It had some, it had a nice, like, I'm not sure what you call it, motif, maybe? I'm not going to hum it for you or try to describe it, but it's something that comes back a few times when Pennywise shows up, and it's usually played on this, on a violin that's playing it at, like, slightly too high a register, so that's pretty effective, and I like that, and it sounds cool, so. I think the technical elements of this movie are all very good, especially the makeup. Great job, everyone. In fact, let me read through your names again.
Oh, no.
No.
Don't do that. Yeah, I feel like I haven't said very many positive things about the movie, but I do agree. I think it's well made. It's very slick. I think some of that slickness can be attributed to the fact that it's less of a horror movie and a bit more of an action movie. They use a lot of Steadicam. I think there's one moment where it looks handheld in the whole movie. But yeah, in general, it looks very slick, very neat, very nice. Which I think is good, because I don't think the movie would have benefited from being, like, dirtier or grimier, especially with the nature of the villain being an alien, a shape-shifting alien from outer space. I don't think that's something that benefits from seeming really gritty and realistic. I think it should look a little movie-y. And yeah, I like all the actors. I like the dialogue. I just think structurally the movie is pulling apart at the seams. And also, I think the third act is just rough, because when they go into the well house for the first time and then they fail to really accomplish anything, then there's the classic third act, you know, splitting a part of the group, and then they get people back together. And it just seems like it should be taking more time. It's one of the moments that I believe, Ellie, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that the book is structured so that it flips between the adults and the kids. And this is one of those moments where it definitely feels like you can tell that you're not meant to live in only this story, because it feels like we should have more time. It feels like, it just feels very, I'm not getting the right word, very stilted in terms of then the group coming back together, especially since we only see Bill recruit Richie, but we don't see him recruit anyone else. He gives a phone call to, like, Eddie, but the other people just jump back in. They're more than happy to go and do the thing that they were not excited to do before. Which I think is just kind of lame. And yeah, I'm never a fan of movies with, like, a pseudo-climax and then kind of a build-up to another climax. It just feels like the whole thing's drawn out. So anyway, let's get to ratings. I've talked myself down in...
You do that a lot.
Well, the more I talk about it, the more I'm like, well, I really just don't have very many positive things to say, so I can't justify giving it a very positive sort of number. I think this movie is above absolutely mediocre, but I don't think it's very close to being something that I really enjoy anymore, which is tough. I remember very fondly seeing this movie in theaters. I really enjoyed it in theaters. just didn't stick around. I'm going to give it a 6.4 out of 10.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't care that I am not as big of a fan of this movie. If anything, it just makes me dislike past me for being soft.
Whoa.
Yeah, I don't hate this movie. I wouldn't even say that I dislike this movie. I just think this movie has a lot of problems. There are moments that are really enjoyable. Pennywise, acting, makeup. Shout out to all those people I shouted out to. Special effects. And it's not necessarily something that if someone was like, oh, should I watch this movie? I would be like, no. I would be like, well, maybe. Or yes, but. So yeah, there's just problems with its structure and with its characters, that just, I mean, they just weigh the movie down. So I'm going to give it a C+. It's just on that northern edge of meh. So congratulations, it. I'm sorry.
All right, well, let's get to recommendations. I was kind of torn because this movie, again, is so split between being a horror movie and being a bit of a coming-of-age movie. So I was kind of torn between two movies that I would recommend for both of those qualities. I'm going to go with the horror movie route. I'm going to recommend It Follows, which was also a movie with it in the title. And an unnamed, generic sort of enemy. But, yeah, this movie made a reasonably big splash. I think around the same time that the first It movie came out, it received a lot of positive reviews. I believe it's receiving a sequel here in not too long. The reason I'm recommending this is I think some of the best scares from It are in It Follows. As in the sense that there's always someone in the background of the scene that you're nervous about being the villain. If you don't have any idea what this movie is about, it's about a demon or some sort of demon-esque, unknown, magical thing that basically hunts you down and then kills you. And the only way to escape it or have it not kill you is you have to sleep with someone, and then the demon starts following them. I think it's a really fun play on classic sort of horror movie tropes. It is very effective at being scary. It's got a great soundtrack. It is maybe a little longer than it should be for the premise that it has, but I think it's really, really good. It's got a fantastic scare that is really disturbing and very much scares me at night when I'm just wandering around my apartment in the dark alone. And I'm like, oh, flip, is that a terrifying giant man in the corner? But yeah, that's going to be my recommendation. I think it's a really good horror movie. I'm excited for the sequel.
Yeah, you got to watch out for those basketball players. They'll get you every time.
It's not a basketball player. It is like a disturb. It's like an 8-foot.
I know what you're
tall.
Talking about.
Yeah.
It's played by a basketball player.
Is it really?
Gosh, I'm pretty sure.
It's creepy. Ugh.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that you liked that movie so much. Good warning about the dangers of STDs, sexually transmitted demons.
Funny.
I'm pretty sure.
No one's made that joke before.
Yeah, never heard that one before. I haven't seen that movie. I'm not super interested in it because it sounds too scary. Yeah. Well, my recommendation is kind of a cheat, maybe, because it's another movie based on a Stephen King book, although that is kind of where the similarities ends. My recommendation is Frank Darabont's The Mist, which is based on Stephen King's The Mist. This is a movie about some people who get trapped in a grocery store after a, like, interdimensional mist that hosts lots of scary creatures sweeps over their town. So it's very much like Night of the Living Dead in that a lot of the tension comes from the dynamics inside the location. of the characters and their different reactions. So that's good. I know that I make fun of Stephen King and I insult him a lot, but it's because I love you, Steve. I do think that you're a good author. And I have a lot of your books that I really enjoy. And this is one of them. I don't actually own this book, but I do really enjoy it. It's actually a novella. It's not a book. It's part of a short story collection. But anyway, Nathan shaking his head as if my rambling is not the most endearing thing about this entire program.
It's not.
The movie is really good. It's very tense. It does have that Night of the Living Dead tension with the different characters. And I always like seeing the different ways that people react or that a movie imagines people reacting in these kinds of situations. It's got a lot of different monsters, but in this case, I do think it makes sense because they're all from a different dimension and it's not trying to create a single cohesive antagonist. The antagonist is people, just like in The Walking Dead.
Whoa.
I know. Mind blowing. Yeah, the special effects are a little iffy because this movie came out in like the early 2000s and there's a lot of CGI. So it does look a little like, oh man. The special effects are dodgy, but that's okay. There's a little bit of charm to it, honestly. Of like, oh, it's like looking at CGI's baby pictures. Where you're like, look at how young you were, kiddo. Now that CGI is old and angry and embittered. But yeah, the movie's really good. Frank Darabont, he's a pretty good director. He loves him some Stephen King, I guess, because he's adapted a lot of his stuff. It's better than The Green Mile. It's not better than Shawshank Redemption, I would say. But it is really good, and I would recommend it if you liked, particularly if you liked It, or if you like Stephen King, or if you didn't like It and want something a little bit more satisfying and a little bit scary.
Okay. Yeah, haven't seen that movie. But yeah, Frank Darabont, loves Stephen King, hate Green Mile, huge Green Mile hater here. Someday we'll review it and we'll upset everyone who loves that movie so much. It's a terrible movie. It's not good.
Well, we don't care. We're the people who we say what we think and we don't care who gets mad. But you know what we do care about? We care about the fact that life is hard, full of disappointments. Or at least yeah. I care about that. Nathan doesn't really care. I should say that the Fall Guy review did not make it up last Friday. Maybe I should just stop promising things for the blog. But I'm busy. Come on, Nathan, you probably wouldn't know this, but graduate students can actually get pretty busy with the amount of
Why would you say that to me?
That's a joke, Nathan. It's a funny joke.
Oh, funny. Oh, whoa.
You gotta work with me here, man.
Oh, my bad.
But yeah, it is hopefully coming this week. And then next week, I'll be reviewing Beetlejuice. So get excited for that.
Fun. Nice. But
yeah, Nathan, take us out. Take us out, Mr. Nathan.
Yeah, very exciting. You know, let us know. Do you love Stephen King? Are you upset that we dismissed him and his writing of Bullies? Then send us an email. You know, let us know. Send us an email with any other movie question you want us to answer, a movie you want us to review.
Are you desperately lonely and want someone to talk to? Send us an email and we'll reply and we'll start up a conversation.
I can't promise that we'll do that. But we might reply. Anyway, we hope you enjoyed this episode. We hope you're eagerly anticipating next week's brand new episode on another movie. We're excited for it. So have a great week, and we'll catch you again at the movies.